This episode of the Android Central podcast is supported by A24, presenting Ex Machina, the provocative sci-fi thriller that has audiences and critics seduced. Manola Dargis of the New York Times calls it a critic's pick and a futuristic shocker about men, the machines they make, and the women they dream up. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone says you've never seen anything like it. Ex Machina, playing in theaters now. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central podcast. It is episode number 235 for Friday, the 8th of May. I'm sure that day has some sort of significance. I couldn't think of anything. It's not like the Ides of March. Sounds cool. The 8th of May. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil. I run AC. We got only four of us this week. Russell Holly.
I am here.
Welcome.
I'm not on vacation.
With like a heavenly light from above.
Yeah, we've reached that fun part of the year where like the two sunlights in my room.
The two sunlights in my office
are terrible. It's like an hour every day where it just cooks me.
Alex Dobie, how are you being cooked by sunlight in England?
I'm not being cooked by anything. It's dark here.
And even during the day, you don't really
get cooked by
sunlight. It's dark there during the day too because it's cloudy all the time.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was getting at. Little bit.
I get it now.
But Phil, how about those hurricanes, huh?
Man, my end of Florida escaped it. There's already a subtropical storm going up to the Carolinas today, so let's hope that's not a harbinger of things to come, because I'm not ready for this.
And so make fun of our clouds. Do it.
I just got an all new front yard, and I'm excited to, you know, have it. So, anyway, welcome to the show. Jerry Hildenbrand is off fishing somewhere, hopefully. We haven't heard from him in a couple days, have we?
No,
we heard from him yesterday.
He'll drop in for one message and then say, bye, guys, going back where the internet doesn't reach.
He'll show up downstream somewhere.
Yeah. Not that I'm worried at all. So, where do we want to start? We're kind of picking up after last week a little bit. I've been in review mode off and on this week. Alex has been heads down, finally got the Monster G4 review out, which for as long as it was, I thought it was a really good read, which is to say that Alex is good at his job, I guess.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah.
Worthwhile words, not just a lot of them.
Yeah, I didn't just put like Samuel L. Ipsum into it and just hit publish to see if Phil would notice. There's a lot to say about this phone. It's a lot of new software stuff. It's a really good camera. A lot of new build quality stuff on the plastic and the leather, because you have basically two different designs of this phone, and a big generational leap forward in pretty much every area in LG, and a new chip that we haven't seen before. So a lot of new stuff and a very good phone overall.
I just got done. I did the Pocket Now. I should know the name of the site. I've only known it forever. Pocket Now Weekly. I did their podcast this morning. And so I'm going to repeat myself a little bit, but yeah, I totally agree. Let's just call it now. This is my favorite phone of the year so far.
Yep, agree.
Yep, that's how I feel.
And it's not that the GS6 is bad. I think just the overall totality of this phone, specifically the battery life, but also the edges work for me to hold. It's a little work for me to hang on to. And maybe it's because I have small hands. Maybe it's because it's the edge. I still would prefer a phone a little smaller than this, but I'm enjoying the hell out of the G4. I really am.
I think if we lived in a world where the GS6 actually had decent, you know, not even good, just kind of decent baseline one day battery life, then it would be a really, really, really difficult decision between these two. I think the battery life tips it in the G4's favor for me. It's not going to be the same for everyone, but I think hearing how you guys have been using the GS6 and the kind of life you're getting out of it and how different it is to the G4, which I think is, a decent 16 hours or so for me, then, that's what I'm going with this year, I think.
And 16 hours is that line where anything lower than that, and it's like, well, you're going to have to charge it at some point anyway. Why does it matter that, you know, you're going to have to deal with it regardless? But over 16 means you don't have to worry about it unless you're just doing something crazy throughout the day, right?
Pretty much, and it's a little disappointing that they managed to fit the very latest quick charge stuff in and the wireless charging out of the box, and we had all kinds of theories as to why that might be. But once you're over that, like Andrew was saying, over that one day mark, over that 16 hours that gets you a comfortable day's use, then it kind of doesn't really matter because you're not having to worry about it's 5 p.m. so my GS6 is dead.
I mean, really, the problem with the GS6 isn't that I can't make it through a day. It's that even when I'm at, 80% battery, I have that anxiety that, you're trying to think further and further down the road. Well, okay, maybe I should charge now at 80% and get it back to 100 because then I don't have to worry about it later in the evening. And it's kind of a battery anxiety thing that's the problem, kind of more than the fact that it couldn't make it through the day if you really worked at it. And that's just as big as a problem.
And we're still on pre-release software.
Yeah.
I don't imagine it'll get worse,
Hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, I'm using the Korean one, which is kind of sort of localized for Europe, but not really because it's a Korean phone. And it's been perfectly fine all week on LTE.
I'm still doing, I'm trying to think. It's a little hit and miss for me. I have some days where I'm surprisingly low at the end of the day and others where it's just rock solid. But yeah, I'm perfectly happy. I think the little camera stuff I'm okay with.
What are you talking about specifically?
Just the little niggles that you mentioned in the review, stuff about sharpening and
oh yeah.
And like that does not keep me up at all in the slightest.
We had a
long discussion on the other podcast about SD cards and the external storage, and Jerry would be proud of me. I brought up his insecure storage thing. I put an SD card in it, actually, because I think if I'm going to actually be experimenting with manual photography on it in DNG, in raw file format, I'm going to want that in there because it's only a 32-gigabyte device. But
the raw files this thing produces, I think, are bigger than the raw files that my full-size camera producers are like 20 megs a piece. They're pretty huge.
I thought I got a bigger one, actually. Let me see. Actually, let's talk about that for a second because I fired up Lightroom again. I have used this off and on for mobile stuff, but mainly just for testing the app. But Lightroom is not Lightroom Mobile. It's just Lightroom for Android. Will automatically sync up with your desktop. And I use Lightroom, on the desktop for everything we shoot here. It'll automatically move DNGs over, which is pretty darn handy. That's always my biggest complaint is, all right, how do I get pictures off the phone? How do I get anything off the phone? It's just, Dropbox is so handy for that. It just automatically tosses all my JPEGs up there. So now I have Lightroom doing the raw images, which is great.
Will Dropbox camera upload only pull up JPEGs, or will it auto-import RAWs if you switch to RAW?
The way it works is it saves as a RAW and a JPEG, and the RAW and JPEG have the same file name, so the LG Gallery knows that they're the same picture, but doesn't let you share or do anything with the DNG. You have to pull that off.
So Dropbox camera upload would only pull the JPEG up.
It would only grab the JPEG. I think that's got to be like a file extension thing, like it looks for JPEGs, not DNGs or whatever.
I'm looking at it now, and it just gives you two options, what to upload, photos and videos or photos only.
This is a relatively new thing. HTC had an OTA for the M9 that brought in RAW like a week before this came out, and it's going to be, I wouldn't doubt that they would do it eventually, but it's still very, very new stuff that we're playing around with here.
I mean, what I would really, what you could see them doing is, turn on, RAW backup into one folder and JPEG backup into another folder on Dropbox, and then you can, have them separately and have different controls for both of them, because, like you said, with 20 meg files, it's not going to be very fun to move those around, and you don't always want them anyway. Sometimes you just want the JPEG anyways because you're not going to post-process it. So,
or if you're like any of us, your camera upload folder is just a dumpster fire anyway. So
I keep my Dropbox camera upload pretty clean, but it's the Google Plus upload that's just a complete... I don't even attempt that.
Yeah.
It's just tons of screenshots, and we use Hangouts, so all those pictures are in there. It's just... Oy.
Let me see. Camera uploads. I have 32 gigabytes in my camera uploads folder.
I have 3 years of archives in that Dropbox camera upload folder.
7,440 items. Every now and then I start going through them, just killing out screenshots and stuff, but it takes I need to spend an entire day doing that.
I had to do it when Dropbox started warning me I was at 95% full, so.
So if you're out there thinking, what the hell is a raw image and why do I care? We're going to do some more on that. For a lot of people, it's going to be overkill, I think. And I don't use it all the time. I do it when I'm shooting with, you know, the real camera, just because it's easy. It's fine. And I actually want to process those pictures. Usually when I'm sharing just from a phone or whatever, it kind of doesn't matter, right? You can do a little bit in Snapseed, but...
I mean, you brought up having Lightroom, but do you even care to edit on a phone? You know, I mean, 5.5-inch screen, nice screen. Do you even care to sit there and move around the sliders and deal with a raw image anyway?
Absolutely not, so much extra time. Yeah, no, definitely not on a phone. It's pretty painful to do. And even Snapseed, I'm not crazy about doing anything other than auto because it's so hard. It's really, really hard to you know, see those acute differences. In fact, I meant to ask you guys about this. I was out, in fact, did that sync up? It might not have. I was shooting, I was standing waiting in line at a food truck to get a taco yesterday, and it was really, really bright outside. And I'm sitting here, I'm holding, you know, the camera like this, so I'm seeing the screen, but it's just totally, the sun's totally washing it out because it's bright. Not just, you know, had nothing to do with the display. It's just hard to see those little differences when you're trying to focus and you're, you know what I mean? Or is it just me?
No, it's something you get on any smartphone screen, the sun, you lose some detail, whether it's the shadows or whatever. And that's the way around that is you just kind of hammer out a few pictures and hope one of them looks good, right?
I mean, that was kind of the issue we talked about with taking pictures with the M9 was... the preview on the screen isn't necessarily going to show you what the camera is going to meter and take a picture of as soon as you hit the shutter key. So you kind of just, like Alex said, take a few, fiddle with it, and then, you know, check them out later and see how you did. And of course, when you have RAW, then you can actually edit it later and, you know, not have to worry about necessarily what the conditions were like when you took it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've fixed a lot of crappy photos in RAW, right. And if that's an option that's available to you on your phone, which is the camera you have with you all the time, then if you want to do that, if you want to live in manual mode, that's great insurance against pretty much ever getting a bad photo on your phone. I mean,
but you know the thing is, I've taken a lot of pictures just in JPEG on camera phones the last couple of years where. You know, it was the only camera I had, and I've even pulled those JPEGs into Lightroom and done a lot of good work on them too. You know, that's just kind of the case. If you're willing to post-process and put some time into it, you can get really good pictures, you know, much better pictures out of just the JPEGs. Obviously, RAW helps you out there, but, you know, you can pull anything off of Galaxy S6, a Note 4, you know, whatever, and, you know, you can edit those after the fact and, you know, further than just, you know, an auto mode in Snapseed, and you can get good results out of those.
There are, you know, proper ways to tone photos. I'd never heard of photo toning really until I worked at the newspaper, and you tone photos specifically for how they're going to be printed in a paper. You know, and you're going from RGB to CMYK, and there are ways that you want to do the darks and the lights to make everything work right when you're working at 300 DPI and stuff like that. But I could see people being intimidated by this sort of thing. It's like, oh my God, there's all these settings. And
like, I mean, what looks good?
How do I know what looks good?
Right. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to recommend that people sign up for, you know, Adobe's, you know, Photography Creative Cloud to just because they bought a G4 and it can shoot in RAW. I mean, first of all, there are simpler, lower-level editors that can handle RAW that will, you know, give you the editing tools that you need. But it's just really, really intimidating if your first introduction to RAW photography is with a G4. I mean, that person has not even thought about that beforehand, and, you know, it could really turn them off, make them go back to auto mode a little bit.
Oh, and I still use auto mode most of the time. It's just easier.
I mean, I find myself shooting an auto on the Galaxy S6 all the time just because it does a great job a lot of the time, and those are the kind of photos I'm taking, you know, quick snapshots of the phone anyway.
What were you going to say, Alex?
I was just going to say, I think, like Andrew was saying, it's not designed for people who want to use this as their first gateway into RAW photography. It's more, and they were kind of framing it this way at the event, like, if you're already into photography, if you're already familiar with RAW, then, hey, you can do the things that you do with your proper photos from your big camera on your G4, and the G4 almost acts like a backup, a more portable camera, like you might have, you know, say a Sony RX100 or something that you carry around, and obviously not quite as good quality as that, but a similar kind of principle where it is a very portable thing that you can know just what? Capture.
I've taken the Sony out of my bag because that's what I had for my backup camera. And I've taken it out because the GSX and now the G4 are that good.
Sure. I mean, there are differences for sure, and the sensor is going to be nowhere near as good.
Yeah.
But do you care at the end of the day if you get good-looking images and you get the ability to shoot in RAW, which can, like I was saying, can save you, you know, can help you salvage a lot of photos that would have otherwise looked quite bad?
Yeah, as a backup camera, it's really good, and it's already in my pocket, and it saves me, you know, so many more grams of weight in my bag. I love that idea. Anything else now that the review is out the door that was kind of surprising or anything?
I guess we talked about performance a little bit before. LG really has gone to war on the weird lag that is on basically, you know, the past generation, at least, of LG phones. Big improvement for them, I think, there. The 808 running, I think, in my experience, noticeably cooler in the G4 compared to the G Flex 2, which was the other LG phone that was running the 810. So make what you will of that. You know, as far as performance goes, you know, I'm not noticing this being, you know, in day-to-day use slower than any 810 phone. Certainly, it's way faster than the G Flex 2. So I wouldn't worry about it having less than the top of the line for CPU in there, because it is just, you know, you make up the difference in software. It's that good.
Cool. Everybody should
go read the review.
And everybody should read the review. So this is a buy for everybody. Buy it.
I still want to use one.
For everybody but Andrew, it's a buy.
I mean, buy one, then use it.
One thing I was thinking about just this morning was, you know, I still can't, it's tough for me to get over the back button thing, but then I was thinking about the fact that I've been using the GS6, and I don't really like the home button and the capacitive multitasking and back buttons that are in the wrong spot either, yet I still use the phone despite those buttons being there, and at least with the G4, so you have the back volume power button, but you have, you know, more standardized on-screen buttons that I like the way that those act, you know, far more. So it's kind of tough to give it too many down marks for the back buttons when they're completely usable, and I've been happy to use another phone that has buttons that I don't like either.
I was thinking about that this morning. I like the buttons on the back more than I like the home button on the GS6, especially because it's home button on the GS6 and then back in multitasking are in the wrong place.
Yeah,
wrong.
My problem
no, stop.
Isn't
they're wrong.
My problem isn't necessarily with the home button, especially now that it has a good fingerprint sensor in it, but it's really the back and the multitasking buttons, because I've been using the Moto X the last couple of days to refamiliarize myself with that, hoping that the 5.1 update will hit here. And it's just like, this is how it should be, back, home, multitasking on the screen.
Yep.
They act the way that you want them to all the time. They're always there. You know, I would even give up a fingerprint sensor so that I could get on-screen buttons on the GS6. That's how strongly I feel about those.
Completely agree. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk about the... Is it a mess? Might be a mess. That is Android 5.1.1 updates. We'll decide if it's a mess.
Sure. But,
or we'll make a mess out of it. Anyway, be right back. Okay, so maybe it's not news that supported open source is now widely accepted at the highest levels of enterprise computing, but the extent of adoption is probably broader than you think, and most of the open source running in elite data centers is Red Hat. And it's more than just Red Hat Enterprise Linux, too. Red Hat offers storage solutions, cloud computing, and everything you need for application development. It's all open source and all enterprise grade, and the stats are eye-opening. Red Hat runs in every executive department of the U.S. federal government, every airline, every telecom giant, and every healthcare company in the Fortune Global 500, the New York Stock Exchange, and every commercial bank in the Fortune 500. And in fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 use Red Hat for everything from the critical to the routine. The only thing that's really surprising is how many people who know a lot about technology, mind you, don't actually know this. And it's almost as if Red Hat snuck in, got comfortable, and quietly transformed the technology business without making a fuss. Sometimes the most disruptive technology is the stuff no one notices first. To find out more about how Red Hat is quietly redefining enterprise technology, visit redhat.com. Red Hat. Build on it, run with it, count on it. Okay. Hey, by the way, we only got a few people in the Q&A today. If you got questions, fire them in there. We will answer them forthwith. I love saying forthwith. I love typing it for some reason. Am I even saying it right?
You are actually saying it right.
You sound surprised.
You say Yahoo's wrong, so it's a toss-up. You do.
It depends on how it fits in there. Yahoo!
Ow, my ears.
Yeah.
So Android 5.1.1, I guess in two respects. it's on a watch, and by the way, look what I did to the Urbane. I put metal on it. Ooh, you can see it. Even in this crappy video, you can see the difference between the brushed metal of the band and then how glossy the...
And even the body of the watch, though, the dial right around the screen is kind of more matte, and then it gets shiny on the buckle parts.
That's how I figure I can get away with doing this. Well, what? It matches right. The bezel. It's fine. Yeah, I had to try it just to see how it was. So this is like a $70 band from Amazon I got.
It doesn't look too out of place.
I like it. I need to put one link back in it, I think.
I honestly don't really care for the black leather anyway. It's a little...
Now that I see it from this angle, I think I agree with Maria.
The stitching looks a little... I mean, when you look up close, the stitching looks nice, but it's a little cheap in that it doesn't really match the really shiny face of the watch. And it's just not really a band style that's very, like, daily wear. You know, it's a little dressy, and it's just, it doesn't really work well with just a t-shirt. It's meant to be, worn up, under a, under a suit coat or something like that. It's just a little too fancy, and I think that you could make it, a little more neutral if it's going to be a stock band right out of the box.
And that's one of the things I like about the 360 still, is you can... Yeah, it's more sort of plausible, I guess, to wear it with anything because it is quite neutral.
Right. That just shows when you say leather band, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be all comparable. This is, the shinier leather is a little more dressy, whereas the Moto 360 is just a little more plain and you can wear it with whatever.
I can't reach it where it is right now, but I still think that the Zen Watch does a really nice job of kind of meeting in the middle there.
And I mean, I can't even think about how out of place the Urbane would look in gold if you're not wearing wearing the right kind of jewelry otherwise or anything like that. It's just a little too ostentatious. And if
your shirt's not open to here with your hairy chest hanging out.
Exactly, and you don't live in Miami.
You're in Vegas. And here's what I said in the review. If you want something that's still a little dressy and not as expensive, look at the Zen Watch. Because especially with the metal band on it, I really like the Zen Watch.
I really wish that LG would have gone with something like Motorola did, where you've got like a light champagne gold and then a silver and then a black model too, so that you have those choices. Like this is too shiny and too blingy to be and just large in general to be worn every single day. It's nice and light for its size, which is good, so you don't feel like you're putting on one of these, larger chronograph watches that's just super heavy and you couldn't wear it. But the style is the only thing hurting it from being worn every day.
You talk about a black version, and the G-Watch R is basically the black version of this.
Right.
Okay, it's a little chunkier, but the internals are a bit different, I guess. But, you look at the two side by side, it is that. It's just a different paint job on the top of a very, very similar design.
I do like that they lost the notches around the dial, and it's just a little sleeker than the G-Watch R, but I agree. If they had this style that was a little more subdued, and then also in that black G-Watch R color, that'd be really nice.
How are you doing with the overall bulk of it? Because, it is a little thick, but like you said, it's not... there are normal mechanical watches out there that are a lot bigger than this.
Oh, yeah. I have one in my drawer right here that I wear that's much larger than this, but it does. I was very surprised because I saw it on people's wrists and I was like, wow, they must have really small wrists. But, you know, I put it on mine and it's, you know, it's coming all the way across. And the problem is if my wrist was any skinnier, the issue is that these lugs, the band sticks out so far that yep. it gets a little uncomfortable. So you kind of have this spot where, I don't know if I could show it. So where the band would be going, you know, in instead if it was kind of shifted over like that. And it's right on that line for me where it's not quite comfortable enough because the back is just flat so it doesn't curve with your wrist nicely and the lugs are so far out that it doesn't feel like it can fit on your wrist snugly the way that the Moto 360 can, even though they're both round and they're both roughly the same size.
You'll have to be careful too if you're looking at a different bracelet or whatever, because it's actually pretty tight in there. I had to work at it a little bit to get these to fit, and they do fit, but you can feel where, if you can see it, where this squarish, you know, junction right there is hitting up against the body.
And the interesting thing is, you know, you can't, I put this on Google Plus, that you can't look at the size of this screen and make an assessment of what size the watch is because there's so much extra metal around it that. And, you know, we talked about on the Moto 360, the way the mounting points for the band are way, you know, way up inside. So it really reduces the overall size. This is the exact opposite problem with the huge lugs that come out on the sides. Your band is so far removed from the screen that it's just a substantial item.
Android 5.1.1 on it. I mean, it's Android Wear. It's not like you're running. You know, it doesn't look like Lollipop. It's a little more colorful. You get some more menu options, which I guess is good. I mean, the problem is they, you know, instead of this one vertical scrolling screen, you now have columns as well. So it's like, all right, I'm tapping on scrolling more.
It got a little confusing. With the fact that you can, I mean, you're used to, in the old version on your home screen, you tap once and, you know, it turns it on. But now it's like you can swipe over and see apps and then swipe over again and see contacts, swipe over again, and now you're in, you know, show me my steps, you know, listen, whatever.
By which point I could have pulled out a phone and...
Exactly. I mean, I do like what they did with the pull down to change your notifications and things like that. It's, you know, not having swipes within swipes, you know, within a swipey menu made sense, but it was still a little jarring even to somebody like me that uses Android Wear every day to see this new interface where you're like, whoa, now there's like even more things you can do and there's multiple ways to change your watch face, and it's just, it got a little confusing, and I'm not sure how I feel about having the dedicated app launcher just being one swipe away. I feel like that's something that I'm not going to scroll in here and launch the Amazon shopping app as often as I'm going to swipe over once and call somebody or message somebody. So I feel like the hierarchy of needs got a little messed up in this update.
I don't know. You got to remember back when Android Wear first came out, one of the most popular apps was the Wear Mini Launcher, which did pretty much the same thing. And
people were trying to make the leap from a phone to a watch, and I don't think we were quite ready to... To give and you know how
arguably we're still not, but
well, yeah, I think I'm waiting for Russell to just drop like a knowledge bomb on me and be like, no, here's why you're doing it wrong. Nothing.
You know, you still have trouble with notifications. So as far as like how watches get used, the way that the smartwatch setup is right now, it's. I don't know. It's really confusing. It's not something that I think that there is one right way to do right now, because like you said, we've got people trying to do the mini launcher, and then we've got people who are still trying to figure out what life would be like if we put a keyboard on these stupid things. Don't put a keyboard on your watch. Don't put a browser on your watch. I will find you.
LG, you know, put a dialer on here.
Yeah, no.
Why? It's a certain...
A dialer, you can kind of... I mean, a dialer is just like a 3x3 grid, isn't it? You can get away with that more than you can get away with the keyboard.
It's worse. It's worse. Hang on. Here it goes.
How is it worse?
I'll show you.
I think that Phil made the good point that at some point, once you get to a certain number of interactions on the watch, you could have just pulled out your phone. And in most cases, you do have your phone at hand. And I think we talked about it last week where... The phone only requires one hand to get something done, the watch requires two hands because you have to hold up your wrist, which, you know, you can't do anything with this hand anymore, and now you're swiping around on there. So, I mean, I like the fact that it really looks like they're... I mean, the big interface jumps that we saw between the old version and the new version of Wear that's on the Urbane shows that they're really trying a lot of new stuff because, I mean, a lot has changed.
Here's the dialer, but I accidentally just called it the Here's that's the dialer. So
that's terrible.
Why in the name of all things holy?
I haven't even found that. Oh, it's under call, not dialer.
That's the LG call app that they put out.
Okay, that is pretty terrible. That's awful.
Oh, I see. You have to download it on the phone, too.
Yeah, it's a separate app. It also gives you, you know, your favorite contacts, which is good. That's fine. And it gives you recent contacts, which is all sort of already built in.
Right. But favorite contacts is already built in.
Why would you put a dialer on? No, just no. Don't. No,
I don't like that at all.
My favorite of the smartwatch things so far was the part where it was... it had this little transparent display and was something I could wear on my face. That was like my favorite thing that we've done with smartwatches so far.
It's funny that I've been wearing this and I didn't go into the app launcher and go, hey, I wonder if I can make a call from this. I mean, I'm scrolling through the app launcher here and seeing, you know, available apps, and none of this stuff is really anything that I'd want to seek out to do. I mean, I really like the fact that it's the stuff that I use most on the watch is voice replies for messages and texts and things, and then, you know, push information, you know, the Google Now cards about sports scores, you know, Google Now cards about time to certain place, transit navigation cards, things like that. I don't go out, I don't look at the watch like going searching for things. It's only when it comes to me that I find it the most useful.
There are no points in which flicking over to the call app, dialing a number that you have, you know, memorized in your head or that you're reading off of a piece of paper, and then placing the call, that number of steps is never going to be more convenient than pulling out your phone and making the call, or, you know, doing OK Google call, you know, whoever that person was.
Right.
Now, granted, you can't just say OK Google call and then give a number, as far as I'm aware. Mm-hmm. So there is a slight disconnect there. But I mean, we're kind of drifting away from what, you know, smartphone app developers learned 2 years ago, which is that the total number of taps that it takes to complete a task matters. And that's something that smartwatch developers are going to have to be even more careful with than on the smartphone, because, you know, you lose my attention after like two taps. So you got to figure it out.
It goes way back to the Palm days, you know? I mean, and they were really anal about it, and rightfully so. It's a good thing. So that's Android 5.1.1 on the watch. Oh, what about Wi-Fi? Andrew, you using that at all?
I think he's gone.
Oh, did we lose Andrew? We lost Andrew, who was, by the way, boasting about his connection speeds and all that right before the show. Just saying.
Are you using Wi-Fi at all?
No. Yeah, I mean, the way it works is, and actually mine didn't work for a while because, and this is a retail watch, it was apparently awaiting a software update. So Wi-Fi wasn't working at first. I couldn't get the LG call thing to work. When you have to turn it on the phone side first. Yeah, you're back. You have to turn it on the phone side first. And then the watch will connect to the same Wi-Fi spots that your phone knows. And if the watch disappears from Bluetooth range of the phone will then spit notifications up into the cloud, and the cloud will then spit them down via Wi-Fi to the watch. And I have yet to be in a single point in which I absolutely have to have that to happen. Now, I don't have a huge house.
Right. I've left mine, the two options you have is off or automatic. So you can't force it onto Wi-Fi. So it'll always prefer Bluetooth, which is smart. That's the way to go. I've never really been in that situation either. And I mean, even prior watches, when I didn't have Wi-Fi on them, I was never like, dang, I wish I had Wi-Fi right now. I've tested it and it does work. It just automatically finds the nearest network that you've pre-authenticated with on your phone, and it's there, which is cool. But it goes back to that interacting with the watch thing. There are a lot of things on the watch that even if I didn't have my phone with me, I wouldn't go onto the watch, you know, seeing that. So I don't know what to, I don't know. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. It's like, okay, you have that, sure, but do I ever even want to use it even if I didn't have the phone? No, not really.
Yeah, it's kind of how I am. I mean, I get why it can be revolutionary for people, but for me, no, not at all.
No.
Bigger deal, I guess, if you're Sergey Brin in your Google Mansion and, you know, you got to have your watch working at all times, even if your phone is in, like, one wing over.
It very much kind of feels like that sort of feature that, yeah, that somebody decided was important and needed to be done. And I'm not saying there aren't use cases for it. I just don't need that at all.
I mean, the nice thing is that it's seamless. So if you leave it on auto, it's not going to be doing anything. It's just once it disconnects from Bluetooth, it'll try Wi-Fi. So, you know, that once a week time where you're more than, you know, 35 feet away from your phone for like 10 minutes, you'll still get, you know, a notification on your wrist, and it won't be anything that's so pressing that you need to interact with the watch. But when you get back to your phone, it's not like it has to reconnect and then, you know, sync back up and here's a bunch of notifications.
Yeah. Okay.
As long as it's not doing anything bad, like draining battery or anything like that, then I'm happy that, you know, I'm happy about it.
You're not drawing emoji, are you?
Haven't once considered it.
Like, speaking of things, they're just like, so I mean, if you have the time to sit there and draw something on there and then have the watch try to figure out what it is,
because you can select it, like, right, just you can think that you're doing it so clandestinely or something.
It's like, your phone,
people are noticing you. Just
send me words like an adult does. That's what.
And the voice transcription works really well.
Yeah.
If you want to do a voice reply and you can speak it back, you know, you don't need to do or be drawing emoji.
As soon as my 360 gets this update, I'm sending you both emojis all the time.
Nope.
I will figure it out. I will bring a stylus with me places just so that I can draw emoji for you guys.
My next review is going to be emoji only. Figure it out, Phil. Figure it out.
I've had to tell my eldest daughter, who, you know, we have the spare phone laying around the house for her to use, like if she gets home and just nobody happens to be there or whatever.
Oh, go figure. You have a spare phone?
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I'm paying $10 a month to latch it onto the plan. But she takes it back to her room and just like, or actually, even when we're out traveling, she'll just text me to say hi. But half the time, it's just friggin' emoji. It's like, no, Mia. And I told her, I was like, Mia, just use words, please. You have to use words. I'm not your friends. I love your friends, but I need words.
That's how my daughter started out doing the same thing. They got the ability to send me messages, and it was entire strings of emoji. And I was just like, nope, you have to stop.
Hurt, smiley face, lobster. What? All right, let's take one more break. And when we get back, we will dive into the Q&A. If you guys have questions, we might have answers. Maybe.
An answer. One.
We can do it. One answer for all the questions.
Pick the ones that we can actually answer. That'd be great.
Shaving can be a pain. It's uncomfortable. It can cause razor burn, nicks, and you're probably paying an arm and a leg for that pleasure. Well, that's where Harry's comes in. For about half the price of the other big branded blades, you get a quality shaving experience delivered right to your home, and that includes free shipping. And Harry's is better, too. The first blades were made in Germany, and Harry's liked them so much that they bought the entire factory there. So why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades? It's half the price at Harry's, and you get a shave that respects your skin, face, your legs, and your wallet. It's time to get rid of those expensive, poor-quality blades. Plus, no more plexiglass cabinets to unlock either. So how inexpensive and easy is it? Well, I've got a beard now, and I still have Harry's. In fact, it makes even more sense if you don't shave every day. You get a quality razor, cream, and blades that gets the job done at a fraction of the price. So I just have to do a little cleanup around the edges, and that absolutely makes Harry's a no-brainer for me. The starter set costs just $15, and if you use coupon code AC at checkout, you can save $5 off that first purchase. So go to harrys.com, enter coupon code AC, save $5 on your initial order, and start shaving better today. If you were an emoji, what would you be?
There are so many, though.
Not to go all BuzzFeed on you on Friday afternoon, but...
If nothing. Emojis were inspirational posters, which would you be?
The hanging head
inspirational.
I've been in a lot of weird meetings where people are decrying the various emojis and how, you know, HTC has its own emojis, but Google has these yellow blobs, and the yellow blobs suck, and do you guys prefer one over another?
No.
My thing with HTC emojis is that the regular smiley face just looks really smug, which kind of ruins that for me, because it's the most basic emoji, and it just looks like either you or the person that you're sending it to is being unintentionally just really smarmy. I don't know. Right. Maybe that's just me.
And part of the problem is that no matter what it looks like to you, it'll look like something different when it arrives right on the other end.
Mm.
So you might, you know, you might be sending your smug HTC emoji, and they're getting a super happy one on their iPhone or on whatever other platform. Fundamental emoji problems.
Yeah. All right, into the Q&A. Brian wants to know, how many times this week has someone asked you if that thing on your wrist is a new iPhone watch thing? Only once.
Never.
For me, but I mean, I've been getting that since the Apple Watch was announced.
Nothing here.
Hmm. I mean,
never,
I tell them, yeah, I mean, I say it's sort of the same thing, but it's for Android.
I mean, like I said last week, there are very few people who have said, oh, is that a smartwatch? What does it do? What would I, you know, what can I do with it? They're just not, it's just not really on their radar as a cool thing to check out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had the Apple Watch comment a couple of times with various watches. And the weirdest comment has been, I think it was airport security somewhere coming back from Berlin. The guy asked if it was a Samsung Gear, of all things.
Jeez, that's upsetting.
Yeah.
The only proper identification I've ever had is when I was with the red Pebble. They knew what the Pebble was, and you know they picked it out perfectly. So that's something good for Pebble, I suppose.
If you've ever been upgraded on an airplane, you know that there's always like one business dude in his suit making deals, like walking onto the plane on the phone. As soon as the plane lands, he's back on the phone. The big chunky corporate laptop's out as soon as it can be.
Plugged in because it only gets an hour of battery life.
Yeah. I mean, I plug in when I can too. But there was one of those guys sitting in front of me last week, and I did realize like he was wearing a Pebble with a suit. It's kind of cool to see, actually. But no,
I think a Pebble is kind of like a 360. The Pebble is, especially the original Pebble, is neutral enough that you can kind of get away with it with a lot of things that you wouldn't otherwise expect to be able to get away with a plastic watch.
It kind of looks more like a fitness band in the way, I mean, you know, people wear their Fitbits and Jawbone Ups with their suits, and it's kind of an accepted thing. You have this rubber fitness band on, and that's fine.
He had it was a black Pebble Steel.
Hmm.
That's what he had. Hey, back to 511 for a second, because I totally meant to talk about why I said the whole mess thing. So the Nexus 9 is supposedly getting Android 511 anytime now. Supposedly it was yesterday.
Yesterday, rolling out now to a Nexus 9
coming
near you.
Coming to a Nexus 9 near eventually. You.
Except,
I loved the joke that Andrew made about that.
Earlier this week, 5.0.2 started dropping. And I mean, they put a factory image out for it. This is not some like weird random update. And a lot of people started having problems. I had problems too. I boot looped as soon as I sideloaded the update, just like I've done a million times.
Hey, at least your tablet still works, unlike my last OTA.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, people have been yelling at me for not yelling more about 5.1 not coming out for the Nexus 9 yet. I don't know what to say. Me yelling is not going to make things happen any quicker. I appreciate the fact that people think we have that sort of pull, but yeah, you know, and that's just not
well
kind of
and
the way we do that.
Who do you yell at? You don't know who to yell at or what. Well, first of all, going even one step further back, you don't know exactly why you're yelling, other than there's a thing that hasn't happened yet. Whether or not that thing should have happened is up for debate.
And, I mean, Google knows it hasn't pushed. Google's the one that pushes it. Same thing for the for the Droid Turbo. I'm getting 5.1, and it's apparently going to go straight to 5.1. But yeah, I mean, like me doing a story saying the Motorola Droid Turbo still hasn't been updated. What's the next sentence? I know it. Verizon knows it. Motorola knows it. They're not going to push it faster just because we did a story anyway. But yeah, the 5.02, a lot of people had issues, and I finally just factory reset the damn thing. You know, and if you're where it really gets a little squirrely is if your bootloader's not unlocked, because then you don't have the factory image.
Your option is to factory reset and hope that what's
and
there
hope that
is
works.
Good.
Yeah, and you know, that's what worked for me.
The problem with previous updates and what happened on my Nexus 7 was one step further than that, because you couldn't get into recovery, so you were done for no matter what. And so you should say the issue with the most Nexus 9 is that they were going into a boot loop after they got 5.02. So it installed, but it wouldn't boot up.
Right.
So your only option was to try to factory reset it through recovery, which kind of stinks because, you know, you didn't know ahead of time. You know, most people aren't doing full ADB backups on their tablets before they install an OTA. They shouldn't have to worry about that.
I had one game that apparently is not using Cloud Save properly. Otherwise, I'm fine. Like, it's a pain, but not a huge deal.
I mean, we reset and set up new phones and tablets all the time. You know, the idea of factory resetting a phone or a tablet that somebody's been using for 7 or 8 months and doesn't ever plan to factory reset, now being forced to do so, is really a downer.
I mean, this is me just kind of talking out both sides of my butt, but like, it feels that updates have been just weird. Like, I normally with a Nexus, I'm like, yes, update, do it right away.
Oh, I'll tell you. I've got two Nexuses that are sitting in the drawer dead because of OTA updates. That's really bad.
It really can't happen. I mean, it also goes to show you just how few Nexuses are out there, right? We saw the new platform versions this week, and we're still under Lollipop's still under 10%, and that's with, you know, Nexus 6, Nexus 7, Nexus 7, Nexus 9, Nexus 10.
Yeah, that's Nexus 5 and 4.
It's still 10% of an exponentially increasing pie, isn't it?
It is, but that just makes you realize. Yeah. How many other devices that are not Nexus are out there?
You have to put that into perspective of the fact that there are tens and tens of millions of Galaxy S5s, Note 4s,
yep,
and S6s out there, you know, M8s, that all have Lollipop as well, and that's a lot larger number than Nexuses out there.
Yeah, I think all of the big phones from last year now have, well, the exception of the Turbo, I guess, pretty much all the big phones from last year now have it, don't they? So,
and when we're talking about Nexus devices, even with Lollipop on them, the 2013 Nexus 7 is probably a disproportionately large number of those Nexus devices as well.
I'm still jealous of my kid using that thing.
And so even with that, we still don't have enough cases round up where we can tell what's going wrong with these updates, which is kind of the issue that Phil's getting at.
I mean, it's still absolutely not good that an update ever breaks a phone. Absolutely. And we've seen, you know, more retail devices having, you know, Sprint releases used to have a lot of problems with HTC and Samsung. And I mean, I get that there are a lot of things that can go wrong, and you will always find bugs. You know, something always goes wrong no matter how much testing you do. That's the way the world works. There are things you can't account for. But man, it just feels like it's been a weird 6 months. That something strange has been going on.
Yep. There are way too many little problems. And it's not like one big thing, but it's a ton of little things that are not coming together well.
And these are way bigger issues than, oh, I don't like how the notifications work, or I don't like how this, you know, this interface action works. It's like my phone won't start up after that update.
Or I lost my contacts, and
that's a way bigger problem.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, but anyway, that's what's going on with the Nexus 9, and I'm using it right alongside everybody. So it's not that I, you know, enjoy having a slow, laggy tablet. It's fine right now. Give it two more weeks, and it'll probably be back to normal unless something big actually changes. And I hope it does, because I like the tablet.
Well, in a few weeks, we might have another factory image to flash to that Nexus 9.
Yeah, so Ryan asks, too early for Google I.O. predictions. Yeah, I mean, some. I guess the schedule of the agenda came out this week, and you know,
as it
Android
does,
M preview was mentioned in, I forget which one, which was very quickly pulled. But, I mean, look, guys, that's not a big... I think I said in the post, it's not a surprise to anyone who can flip a coin. Either an M preview is going to happen or it won't.
Anyone who listened to the Fireside Chat last, I think it was the Fireside Chat last year with Dave Burke, who actually pretty much said in a bit of a roundabout way that this is the thing they want to do every year. No guarantees, but this is the direction things are going in.
Yeah, and yep. You know what? M comes after L. I'll go ahead and say it now. It's a 50-50 chance we'll get an N preview in a year. You heard it here first. Who was it? Bloomberg had the story this morning, yesterday. I forget when it was, about maybe finally getting more control over which, you know, permissions and when you can control them in applications. That's a big deal. That's actually a huge deal.
I mean, all you have to do is look at the way the iOS handles it to get an idea of how that would work.
And all you have to do is look at a Huawei phone to see kind of a terrible implementation of that.
or look at the iPhone for a terrible implementation too. I mean, you get into this issue where you have pop-up overload, permission overload, where rather than obscuring it, it's throwing it all in your face so that you choose to obscure it and say, yeah, okay, I get it.
Absolutely, yeah. And the problem I have with Huawei phones, the way they do it is they put all of that on the user, and it's just this mental overhead that it's almost like you're getting the user to do something that should be the job of the OS. Hopefully Google has a better solution than that, but we'll have to wait and see.
And the thing that will have to happen with this is that apps are going to have to be structured in a way that you can turn those things on and off, and the apps aren't just going to break. And that's kind of been the problem with a lot of these. You have a custom ROM that can force apps to not do things when they need to do them. And it breaks things because the app isn't expecting for you to just not give it data access or not give it GPS access or dialer access or whatever. And now your app just doesn't work. And that's going to come back on developers if Google hasn't set it up in a way that, you know, you can in a predictable way design your app to, you know, work if the user doesn't hand you certain permissions.
I thought the way that CyanogenMod handled it early was really interesting. And I'm not that tinfoil about privacy and stuff, but feeding in just sort of dummy information for, you know, context, if you say no, that way the apps don't freak out. Russell, what was going on with the Truecaller thing in Cyanogen this week?
Yeah, so they partnered up with Truecaller to replace their dialer app with something that has integrated caller ID stuff. Which, you know, the Truecaller stuff is community-driven caller ID. If you get, you know, a call from a company that's a known spammer and, you know, 50 or 60 people who have gotten that number flagged it as a spammer, then it'll tell you when the company number calls that it's, you know, in trouble. Truecaller has been around for a really long time, and they've always been like a neat third-party solution, and they do have like a dialer you can use to replace your stock dialer with, but that means, you know, losing all the features in your stock dialer. And so the CyanogenMod folks are integrating it into a whole new dialer, and it looks pretty nice.
How is this different than I'm trying to remember the, you get like a trial app sometimes in carrier phones, and I forget what it is.
I think they like the Yellow Pages app will do that. And you'll get a caller ID trial service. Like you said, it's like an extra $5 a month or something. I've been using an app called Mr. Number to do that because, you know, we have different SIMs and things and we use Google Voice numbers. So anytime a number comes into the SIM number, it's not a number that I care about anyway. So being able to use an app like that to identify whether I should care about it or not is something that I use and a lot of people already are using.
Why were people freaking out about privacy concerns over this?
Because there were two different articles that came out at the same time, and the way that they were worded was that the folks at CyanogenMod would have your phone information before you would, and the people who call you, that they would have access to that information as well, because people don't think too hard when it comes to how software works, apparently. But, it's you know... The Truecaller guys have been around for a while, and even though it's baked into the dialer, it still has its own app permissions, which are part of the privacy guard thing that you just mentioned. for permission detection. So, I mean, you have all of the same flexibility there as far as, you know, keeping your information private and away from, you know, all of the horrible data collection people out there.
Oh, you mean like your carrier?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even... It's such a mess. And that was the thing that I thought was interesting. You know, you brought up the Yellow Pages app and then Mr. Number, but a lot of these end up being, you know, paid services. And what's interesting that, you know, having talked to a bunch of people who work locally in the local carrier stores is that that's like one of the first things that people will turn off to save a couple of bucks on their bill is the caller ID thing. And a lot of folks get mad that they're being charged for caller ID because it's something that they've just kind of always had forever. And it never occurred to them that it was a separate thing that, you know, got charged for. So I thought that was interesting because I do every once in a while see people kind of rail against not having, you know, an integrated caller ID system that isn't garbage.
And, you know, you kind of, the funny thing is you kind of have this built into the stock Lollipop dialer on the other end, where if you call a number, you call out to a business number that's not in your contacts, it'll pull in the name of the business from Google if it knows it. And now it'll show up in your call log as you called this bank branch or whatever, instead of you called this random number. So it's kind of already, you know, it's already baked into there. So I don't get the worry.
Steve Kondik did a really good kind of quick Q&A on Google Plus yesterday, actually. If you have questions about it, I recommend you go read it. Absolutely. Hey, I just got an update on the Nexus 9, like right this second, actually. Breaking news!
They're for 5.1.1.
There was an issue with the update package, so Google pulled it. And they got a new one that is past certification and is being pushed. So, there you go. It happens.
Yep.
It's just happened a lot lately, or it feels like it. I don't know. I mean, I guess if we weren't all in such a damn hurry to update things.
Everything must be 5 cents, and it must be delivered right now.
Even Apple has had problems before. It happens.
I like this in the Q&A. Carl says that a dialer on a watch is like an eject button on a Blu-ray remote. That's a pretty good point right there. I had to think about it for a second, but I mean, it doesn't matter if you have to pull out the phone to make the call or you have to walk up to your entertainment center to take the disc out anyway.
That is brilliant.
You might have to steal that for the review.
I'm screenshotting it right now. Thank you, Carl. There it is. I'm going to borrow that. Oh, man. Lars, IO 2015, do you think more or less information has leaked compared to previous years? I don't think more has leaked yet. I mean, you guys know how I feel about leaks. It's always... I would rather the company be allowed to, you know, present the news they have to present.
Yeah, and I think with where we are in just the general cycle of Android releases, that there'll be less... you know, barnstorming crazy new stuff to leak this year. It'll be mostly behind the scenes stuff to, you know, maybe material will look a little bit different, but it'll be stuff to make phones work better.
Do 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 do.
So.
What, Russell?
I'm not allowed to say it.
Yeah. Can you tell me?
I wait for Android Central now, and I have to follow the rules.
Oh, those rules. Yeah.
Jeez, Phil.
Yeah,
I mean, basing that on just the fact that it's been a year since we had a big visual and design overhaul for Android. There's only so much they can do in a year on that front. We're not going to see a big crazy redesign of stock Android every year. It makes sense that they stick with that same design and just work on behind the scenes stuff. It's not, that's just common sense, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it, Russell?
Ben says, I appreciated the article about Project Fi not destroying Google Voice, although it looks like some features like caller ID won't be available. Why is Google recommending to use Messenger instead of Hangouts for SMS and MMS?
Well, first of all, because Messenger handles MMS a whole lot better than Hangouts does.
Yes.
But most importantly, because the default for actually sending text messages will be the same across, you know, actual SMS clients, which is important when you're dealing with actual carrier space stuff. You actually want the SMS protocols to be as similar as possible. Hangouts was always a weird workaround, and that's something I think a lot of people don't really understand as far as the Hangouts. And really, Google Voice initially was you know, kind of a weird workaround. But the guy mentioned caller ID on Google Voice, which is something I've never had work correctly. So that's not a feature I'm missing.
I don't rely on Google Voice for much other than forwarding calls to different numbers. I mean, all the other features are pretty trashy. That's why I'm kind of happy to see that Fi is going to kind of, you know, make them pay attention to that system a little bit, and hopefully it's actually going to start working.
Certainly.
I really just want group messages to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I end up in these weird split threads with people, and it's annoying.
Yep, you're at this point where you get a different thread for every reply, and you don't know who you're replying to. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Carl also asks, IO 2015 focus on enterprise? Oh, I hope so, because those are the best parts of the keynotes.
They'll get their slice in the keynote, and then there'll be separate Android for work and Chrome for work stuff in the different sessions, but
it'll be interesting, especially with the Samsung stuff now.
I mean, they're not going to come out and open with enterprise, but of course they've been doing that the last couple years. They're really pushing Chrome for work and education more so than Android even.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, just, you mentioned Chrome there. It's been a year. Well, it will have been almost a year since we first heard about Android apps and Chrome, the thing that eventually turned into the Arc Welder thing that we have now. And maybe we'll see more about what the eventual regular user-facing side of that will look like at I/O. That would seem like a year on a good place to revisit that.
I want to see what happens with the stores. You know, what's going to happen with the Chrome store versus the Play Store, and how are they going to delineate between apps built different ways, if at all? Right now, it's really not clear at all what you're getting when you install.
Unification of everything.
Yeah. They need to try to do something there. The Chrome Web Store is not what somebody thinks about when they think about going to get quality apps.
Do I want all the things integrated? Is that a thing I want? Maybe I want it, and yes. I just don't know it. Yeah.
I mean, I wish that people would, there were more great Chrome apps out there, but there just aren't, and so this is going to be a better way to handle that, probably.
Yeah, it was always going to be, at the end point of this, was always going to be a shortcut for Google to get a really good library of hopefully relatively native-level apps to run on Chromebooks. Yeah. It's going to take a while to get there, and it's going to take even longer before the store side of it is sorted out, but that's the path that we're on.
You know, you have Chrome itself improving, you know, every month, every couple weeks, new features are coming, and the app catalog remains stagnant, really.
Is the battery life going to get any better in Chrome? on my laptop?
Mac. Chrome on Mac? No.
Oh.
Battery life on Chromebooks is great, Phil.
Yes, it is. Much better. I'm going down to the bottom. Does the G Watch R have a Wi-Fi antenna or not?
That doesn't matter.
Why? I know your answer, but tell me why.
So it's you know, yes, it does, but for licensing and communication authorization rules, it doesn't matter. I mean, yes, anything that has a Snapdragon 400 or 300 in it has a Wi-Fi radio, because it's a system on a chip and that stuff is built in, and they're not going to remove it specifically for one smartwatch. Whether or not there's an antenna is something else, but I'm pretty sure in the teardown we saw that there was an antenna, so that wasn't an issue. It didn't get authorized when they pushed it through the FCC, so they have to re-push it through the FCC in order to get it to work here in the U.S., and the question that LG now has to answer is whether or not they sold enough of them to justify the expense, especially now that there is a shiny new LG Watch Urbane sitting on wrists.
It seems like we've been through this before.
The other question is whether Google might have anything to say about that, whether they might step in, because they are exerting much more control of the software side of Android Wear than they would with a normal Android phone or tablet.
Yep. A lot of moving parts there.
I'll put it this way. Without that limitation, where Wi-Fi completely functional on the G Watch R, there would not be a whole lot in the way of functional things on a piece of paper that you could point to as differences between the Watch R and the Watch Urbane to justify the difference in price. I'm not saying that that's what LG did, but I'm saying if you were to put these two side by side in a Best Buy and ask a Best Buy employee, hey, why is this one, you know, what is it, $100 more?
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, there's only so many answers that
because
the Best Buy guy can give.
Is basically
right.
Shiny and it's newer.
Jeff asks, does the Snapdragon 8 instead of the 810 make the LG G4 less future-proof than other current flagships? That is a very good question.
No.
No. I would imagine that if eventually we get to the point where this would stop being upgraded, that, you know, it wouldn't be the hardware that would cause that to happen.
Yeah, I would not worry about that in the slightest.
As we see each year, the software support gets dropped long before the
hardware
is not capable for it.
Yeah. And just to take that back one step further, the Snapdragon 810 is not more or less future-proof than the Snapdragon 800.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Do you think that Google may be working on something similar to Microsoft Continuum? Somebody give me the 30-second version of what Continuum is.
Continuum is what happens when you take a non-existent Windows phone that will hopefully exist within the next year and plug it into a monitor with a Bluetooth mouse and keyboard and get an actual Windows desktop.
Wait, are you talking about the Ubuntu phone?
Yeah, it's the Ubuntu phone.
Are you talking
about going to do this
or the Atrix 4G?
Yeah, let's...
And what's even better is that they think they're going to start doing this with Snapdragon 810s.
I've said this back when there were lots of rumors that there were MacBooks coming with ARM processors in them. This is, you know, last 18 months. And I said, you just have to pick up a Chromebook that's running on an ARM processor and tell me that you want a full operating system running on that processor.
No.
Yep.
You don't even want a Chromebook running on an Exynos octa-core 7400 processor or a Snapdragon 810. You need like three times that power to be running something, especially something as heavy as Mac OS or Windows. I mean, they can barely run Chrome OS. So.
And the trade-off there is that none of those processors are going to do much of anything in a smartphone that you're going to enjoy. So best of luck, Microsoft. I genuinely hope you pull it off. I'm pretty sure you're not going to.
Laura says, back on Android Wear, the Wi-Fi connection actually is pretty useful for people working at larger companies with actual colleagues and actual meetings and actual times when you have to go down to the coffee machine. Problem is, you guys work from home. Actually, I don't work from home, but thanks. No, it's a matter of physicality. That's all it is, right?
And it doesn't, he doesn't even make a point. I mean, that doesn't mean that you, just because you have an actual jobby job, doesn't mean that you can't bring your phone with you.
Yeah.
I mean, your phone fits in your suit pants just as well as it fits in my sweatpants. So yeah. You can walk down to the coffee machine
really,
with the phone.
You know, the Wi-Fi thing is perfect for me. I work from home. I'm at home most of the time, but I don't always grab my phone and take it with me when I wander through the house. And because there's a several large pieces of machinery in between my Wi-Fi router and my office, I pretty frequently find myself, you know, wondering what life would be like with Wi-Fi on my watch. So it's not, you know, an immediate dismissal thing. It's just not for these two guys in this particular hangout.
I've actually been very surprised at how good a Bluetooth connection these watches have managed to keep a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say it's always, because sometimes it seems like it just drops randomly and, you know, why am I not seeing anything? Oh, okay. That's all it is. So, it's not that tough a mental thing to wrap around. Out of Bluetooth range, turn on Wi-Fi. Okay, done.
Yeah, and the big thing is that it's seamless. It just, it just does its thing, and then you get back in Bluetooth range, and it goes back to Bluetooth. I'd be interested to see how well the Watch Urbane handles, you know, a big office park kind of multiple, you know, several router setup, and it's handing off between them. I'm not sure I would handle that situation either.
Well, I mean, if the SSID is the same, then it should be smart enough.
Of course, it also has far less power and range than your phone does, and you know.
Yeah.
How well does it handle walking between access points, things like that?
What's this gonna do with Google I/O when there are just so many
nodes in one place? Oh man, I can't even imagine.
You can't even get a hotspot or your laptop to connect to Wi-Fi. Good luck.
Why isn't my watch connecting to the Wi-Fi?
Have you ever seen the guys who walk around Google I/O with the big red box that detects hotspots?
Yep.
These guys, they have to work the entire week. And their job is quite literally to roam the convention center staring down at this little red box that tells them whether or not there's a broadcast point that's not one of theirs nearby. And they just go hunting access points. And it just seems like the most thankless, angry job. Because, you know, when they find someone, they have to approach them and bug them about it. They have to be like, hey, you know, this box here says that you're running a hotspot. You need to knock that off. And, you know, obviously that's going to start a fight, especially if someone isn't going to turn them off. I mean,
at this point, when you're covering a show, you need to give up on any idea of using a hotspot, even if there isn't a guy with a red box coming to hunt you down. You got to plug
so
it in.
It's so silly.
All right, Lars has a specific use case he would like us to discuss. What about when you go to the toilet? Do you also bring your phone every time?
Well, yeah, right. What else am I going to read? No, I don't. Most of the time I don't. But I also am not going to flick through my watch while I'm on the toilet either. But...
Again, the two-hand situation with the watch.
Yeah. There's a lot going on there.
This is going downhill fast. Barry wants to know...
Jerry. I need Jerry in my life right now.
Barry wants to know, Motorola said the Android 5.1.1 update was coming to 360 in a few weeks. This was back on April 20th. It sadly received zero comments since. Any rumors of a release date, or might they be saving the release for a... No, I mean, the timing might match up, but no, I would expect 5.1 to start pushing the other watches, you know, any time now, really, whenever they wanted to. But I don't know that they'd save that specifically for I.O. I think they're probably making sure, you know, the big bugs are worked out on the Urbane.
I mean, it seems to be working just fine. I mean, I want to see how the lower powered Moto 360 handles it, but the Urbane seems to be handling it as far as
I guess. I wouldn't be surprised if we had to wait a little longer to get the 360 up to this, given the hardware limitations that no one else has, really.
That reminds me to take my original
Jason reminds us,
out.
Every one of you asked for quicker way to launch apps on the watch. That is true. I did not.
I will. You can go find the clips. I did not ask for a faster way to launch apps. But,
I'm pretty sure I did.
Or any way to launch apps, for that matter.
To be fair, the app's the first thing you see now. So, that is true. Brain says, Android M is going to fix Lollipop, just like Jelly Bean fixed ICS back in time, and just like Jerry's been reminding us every week, too, actually. Russell's about to burst. Oh, he's just typing somebody. Russell's not about to burst.
I'm good.
All right, looking at the final questions here. Apparently I didn't click off Lars's toilet question. Sorry.
I want to answer this one from Ed Wilson.
Is it high or low? Where is it?
It's high, but it's like 5 or 6 down.
The 808 one?
Yeah.
You cannot answer it until I click it.
Okay.
Wait for it. Okay. Alex is getting bored. Go ahead.
All right. So since the 808 supports quick charge, do you think kernel devs will be able to add it to custom kernels? No, this is a licensing thing. This is not a software thing. Stop it.
It's often a hardware thing more than anything as well, isn't it?
Because all of the Snapdragon 8 series devices are technically capable of it, but it's a flag that has to be enabled through software, and it's something that gets checked on a system level. And if devices that are found, you know, with it aren't supposed to have it, then Qualcomm will know. Like, that's a thing that, you know, there's detection stuff there. I actually had a long conversation with a couple of guys who do this exact thing, where they found the buttons necessary to enable quick charging, you know, in firmware.
and quickly took their fingers off
the button. there's not good. Don't expect this to happen. And if it does happen, don't use it on your device, because there's a chance that they've, you know, stripped out the things that are, you know, safety things that keep your phone from exploding because of how
it wasn't meant to have a quick charge in the first place. So
I mean, yeah, I mean, so it's a licensing thing. You know, they have to pay Qualcomm to have the rights to have this feature on the phone, and LG either didn't think it was worth it for heat reasons or didn't think it was worth it for financial reasons. We don't know. LG isn't saying one way or the other. 1.8 is more than enough to charge this phone pretty quickly. I mean, that's, unless you are like flat dead and really need to get to 50% in, you know, 20 minutes, you're fine.
That's the only place you really notice the difference with the stock LG charger compared to quick charge. It's getting from dead to 50, not getting from 50, 60, 70 back to 100. Right. There's pretty much no difference from the top.
Well, that's because most quick chargers drop down to like,
exactly, you know, yeah.
Once they cross that 50% threshold anyway. So
yeah,
it's really not as big a deal as it sounds. And as cool as quick charge is, and it really, really is in some situations, it's still not quite a deal breaker yet. And I think that LG kind of proved that. Which is cool, because, you know, Phil and I both kind of nerded out over quick charge for a while there, and now we've kind of calmed down a little bit about it.
I think it's important, but yeah.
Don't use that random old charger that you add that charges at 750 milliamps, and you'll be good. Use that right one that's in the box that's 1.8 or 2.1 or whatever, and your phone's going to be charged up quickly.
That, I think it's time to stick a fork in it.
It's a long one today.
It was a good one today.
It was a good one. I miss Jerry, though.
Yes. Jerry will be back next week, I hope. I will be back next week, I hope. Time is my plane land. I get back on Friday. I'll have to figure this out. I'll look right now. As we are every week, we are brought to you by ShopAndroid.com. Find a lot more stuff for all these new phones, for the HTC One M9, for the GS6, and the Edge. Hopefully some G4 stuff soon. That would be cool. Although, would you want to cover up the leather? I wouldn't.
I just want a bumper. That's the same thing I wanted for the S6 Edge. I'm kind of a bumper guy now.
Really?
Yep.
Really?
Haven't considered a bumper since I had the Nexus 4.
The Nexus 4 bumper was kind of sad. It's not...
Oh, no. I got one that was not the official one. I got one that was actually good.
And then there's
the ones with the 1M8 or the 1M7 rather, where it was like a steel cages that got wrapped around the outside.
Yep,
bumpers come a long way. Yeah.
Let's see. I get back at 2:00, so that works out perfect. Sort of, except for I'll have to come straight from the airport. That's okay. That is all right. All right. So we will be back next week. I'll be tan probably. Well, this light doesn't help any. Sorry. Anything else going on over the next week? I don't think so.
Getting geared up for I.O. pretty much.
Geared up for I.O. Geared up for Asus on the 18th.
Yep.
I'm going to be playing with the Dell tablet. Finally got Lollipop.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we should have you like re-review it.
Yep.
Because there's a lot I liked about that. Software.
Yeah, I mean, it's still something that I was using on a pretty. I have been using pretty regularly, and with Lollipop on it, you know, it seems to be running really well. I thought it was really funny that it encrypted the device during the update and won't let you switch back. It was the first 5.0 update I've seen do that.
Crazy. I think that's it, Alex, Russell, Andrew. Everybody at home. Those were very good Q&A questions today, by the way. I'm glad, even if we give you a hard time about them, they were still good questions. Except for the one guy. You know who you are. I read them all. Even if we don't read them all. All right. We will be back next week. Thank you, everybody. See ya.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Sometimes the most disruptive technology is the stuff that no one notices at first. To find out more about how Red Hat is quietly redefining the enterprise technology space, visit redhat.com. don't know what you guys are talking about. It looks great. Sounds great.